What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the New Printing Press podcast, where we talk about church innovation and honestly just people that I am interested in talking to, really. So I'm here today with Stephen Webb, but you go by Sweb. Is that
Sweb? Everybody knows me as Sweb. That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's the name. Yeah. So here's the thing about the New Printing Press, dude. This is kind of like going on Joe Rogan. So if you have a book or you have something, just prepare. Your life is really about to change because it's a global podcast. Hundreds of thousands of people listen.
Because so, Joe hasn't called me back, so I'm glad at least you called. So that's good to know.
Yeah,
Joe's
exactly.
Just down the street. Exactly. Won't call me back. So
that's right. Okay, so dude, we were just talking before, and I know a little bit about what you do. I came across you on Instagram through maybe Taylor Ransom. Was maybe how I found you.
God bless that man.
God bless him. I just saw him. He was in town last Sunday night. We hung out. He was now that I'm in Nashville, he's pretty close. So it was good to
Good to
see him. I'm sure he'll be on this podcast soon enough.
He needs to be.
All right, dude. So here's the deal, man. I love the way that you think. And I love the content that you're putting out. And so I just wanted to have you on the podcast because here's what I appreciate about you. I appreciate that you're willing to say stuff that nobody else will say, that you know everyone will think. And I will say this. I was a campus pastor for 7 years at an amazing church where my best friend, and my co-founder actually in this company was my senior pastor. So we always laugh because so much of the stuff you say, we've talked about, discussed, argued about, all the above, you know? So bro, I love what you're
that's
about.
So funny.
But the thing is, man, I don't know a ton about you. Like I know a bit. I think you worked at Elevation for a little bit, but just like
give us the
bio, man. Give us the background. What are you up to? How'd you get here? All that kind of stuff.
That's good. First of all, let me just preface. I don't say this very often, but I feel like every now and then it's just probably worth putting down on the record that I love the local church more than maybe most anybody I know, which is exactly why I'm so pissed about the local church. Not the big local church. I'm just saying like individuals, I pick on certain processes we do because I'm like, no, we can be better. I know you could be better. I know this process, that's dumb. I know where you inherited that process. Hey, I know where all of y'all keep copying the egg drop from. Let it die, move on.
Bro, we were literally talking about that with some friends over the weekend. We were like, where did that come from? What, like the Easter egg drop, you know, thing? That's so funny, dude. It's so funny.
That kind of stuff. I'm like, listen, if you can make it work, it's fine. But at the end of the day, I feel like we're just trying to get lazier and lazier. And I don't say we, just the church. I mean, business people do it too. I follow a lot of business stuff. But again, I think we should be better and we can be better. So I'm always pushing people to be better. So anyway, just a little, I could put that after my bio, but that's probably where it's starting out this time.
And I want to get into that actually in a little bit about.
Let's do it.
A vibe shift that I see happening in the church, which is,
good.
I think we'll get to, but I want to talk about that because I love it. So yeah. Okay. So give us some background.
Well, man, let me give you a short version. I'm originally from Texas. I'm currently sitting in Texas right now, north of Austin, where we live now. But my wife's from Texas too. We're both from the Dallas area. Son of a music minister turned lead pastor. My brother's a worship pastor for Craig Rochelle and his team he's in Kansas City. Started most of those campuses in that city for them. So that's just kind of the family I grew up in. It's kind of the church worship, church music folks for years. To kind of shortcut this whole process, the place where I spent the most time and kind of get the most ammo from, as well as the one that gives me a little bit of credibility, is I spent 10 years at Elevation doing expansion. So if it exists beyond the walls or the city of Charlotte, that was my domain. So all the campuses that are beyond Charlotte, I started or instigated, you could say those, even had a lot to do with the online campus stuff for the TV ministry, the things that grew into what everybody knows as this empire now. I was privileged to be a part of the front end of that because my build, how I am, is to build the church. Matter of fact, I was a volunteer at the church. This will kind of explain a little bit about me. I was a volunteer at Elevation. We didn't move there because they offered me a job. We went because God called us there. That's a massive difference in today's world. So we just moved
across
the country.
Wait a minute, can I ask there?
Yeah, you literally
felt like we're supposed to be here and we're going to do it.
Yep, my wife and I were grown-ups. We did not have mom paying our insurance bills. We weren't 18 following a Christian college itch. Instead, we were grown-ups. Like, I was 30, I believe, when we made the move from Denver. We just did a little stint in Denver, but we went from Denver, Colorado to Charlotte's, 1,546 miles door-to-door because God called us there. It took me 9 months to talk Chunks, the executive pastor, into giving me a job. So we really felt called just to go there and just make money however you need to make money, because compensation and calling don't ever have to line up. God didn't ever guarantee that. And so we were like, I guess we'll be compensated some other way then. So I finally talked him into giving me a job. But here's one of the questions that he asked me as a volunteer 5 months before he ever gave me a job. He said, if you were going to grow the church to 100,000 people, what would you do? 100,000 butts in seats. Not what we do. Now everybody mails it in and says online audience is their church, and it's stupid.
Pre-COVID, so, pre-COVID, we were this, but now we're
yeah, everybody's got to justify
new term. Yeah. Pre-COVID, you know, well, we had 17 people. Now we're 150. Yeah.
Right. Right. That's cool, man. Keep chasing yourself down in the spiral.
Yes.
So, yeah. But he asked me that question, and that I like that he asked me that. He saw, I guess, something in me. We had some various conversations. I didn't just meet him when he asked me that, but that kind of became my job description, if you will, for another 10 years after that, was taking the church from whatever it was, a few thousand people to 100,000. Of course, we never hit that butts in seats elevation. Times changed. And again, we did the whole COVID excuse and everything else, I'm sure. But that tells a lot about me. So my job was to spearhead, instigate anything that needed to be built or fixed at Elevation, especially beyond the city of Charlotte. So I resigned there back in 2020, though. Didn't leave the church, none of the clarifier. A lot of people quit the job and quit the church at the same time. I don't know why people do that. I think that's also weak sauce. They need to just change industries and religions if they're going to be that way. But we stayed at the church for another year. And we were in Orlando at the time. But just made a decision to come back to Texas. We both worked for ourselves. We still do. And so my wife and I, so we just came back home essentially to Texas, where my family is, her family is. And so that's the relatively short version of kind of my trip around the Southeast.
Yeah. And then, so you just kind of said, hey, I want to take what I learned and what I executed and kind of start coaching, consulting.
Yeah.
What are you doing now? I know that's a little bit of everything, but like, tell me what
it is. Yeah. It's broad. Everybody does it. Everybody thinks if you work at a big church, the next step is to go coach and consult. But telling stories about a big church you worked at versus knowing how to build it or like a night and day. Or apples and cats, like they're not even close to the same thing. I think a lot of my colleagues and friends have found that out the hard way. So I help them a little bit. I've always been the guy that wanted to build a local church. So even before I had any sort of credibility or a big name business card at a big name church with a famous pastor or something like that, I was always wanting to do that. And somehow people would still ask my opinion, shockingly. And so I've always kind of done it. I kind of got into it because I just am the guy that wants to share stories and answer questions. But I'm really good. This is just a gift from God. I didn't go to school for it. I'm really good at the contextualizing. So that's why I say leadership, church building are more art than science. So I can tell you stories about how Stephen Furtick likes to do bicep workouts or some dumb questions that church planners always want to ask. That's completely irrelevant to their success, but they want to ask that.
Bro, what is Stephen Furtick's morning routine?
Oh my gosh.
I want to know his morning routine.
Dude, to this day, I still get that question at least monthly, not twice a month, something like that. So I can tell you stories as we all could about wherever we've been, whatever we've seen, that's fine. But man, there's a lot of power in like contextualizing. And frankly, even telling people that's not what you should do. You're awesome, bro, at this, not that. And I've just had ability, gift, whatever that God gave me to just do that, as well as not necessarily have to attach myself to the outcome of it necessarily. I don't necessarily need a commission check, if you will. I'm not in a commission-based business, you know what I mean? So just because I started a bunch of campuses, my salary did not reflect that. So I just started doing that. So at Elevation, we didn't have, for example, at Elevation, we did not have a conference team or somebody that would do all the hosting. A lot of churches have that at that size. We never did. It was our goal just to grow our church. And then on the side, Swev, if you got a few extra minutes, you want to show these people around, knock yourself out. And then that kind of snowballed. I just started answering questions. And so then when I resigned, I did not resign leaving something, nor did I resign to go to something else. We resigned because we thought we finished the job, finished the mission. That's something else unique that nobody does these days, apparently. And so we finished. I use the word graduate. I graduated from Elevation is what I'll say. And so then we didn't know what we were going to do. I thought at the end of the day, if we get hungry, I could just name drop and get a job at a church, right? And so we never did that. I didn't want to do that, but I just knew that was my backstop. I was like, maybe Pastor Stephen Furtick will like give me a reference. You know what I mean? I felt like that'll probably help you. So we didn't know what we were going to do, but literally, I'm not even joking. Like as I kind of submitted formally my resignation letter, I got a request from a guy. I said, dude, you happen to do any consulting? I was like, well, I kind of have availability now. And then that kind of just led one thing that I started answering questions at the same time. People would ask me about a job. I'd chase that rabbit for a minute and be like, no, I can't take that job. So then 4 years later, I'm still answering questions. People pay me for it. I do consulting and coaching. They're different things. Consulting, fly in, fly out, tell some stories, punch you in the face, upgrade your paradigm so that you can think beyond your stagnant memory. Coaching is an ongoing, I'm with you on the field. I'm going to make it hurt, but we're going to win together. I'm really bought into your success. Those are two different things. And so I do both of those about 50-50. So,
okay, cool. And is that just all across the body of Christ, like different denominations, church streams, circles, yeah, all kinds of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I had a guy last week, I was in Tennessee in Columbia, not far from you. And a couple weeks ago, and this guy said this thing, I take it as a huge bragging point. I know it sounds really funny, but he said, I've never heard this before. And he said, dude, you know what? I think you're the most objective person I've met my entire life. And I got goosebumps and I got super excited. I still haven't added it to my Instagram bio. I probably ought to. But like, that's a badge of honor for me. Like, I'm not here to make you think like me. I just want you to think at all. And so I've gone from the contemporary Southern Baptist, non-denominational sort of Andy Stanley, Stephen Furtick churches, all the way over to right now, like all but two of my clients would lean far into the super charismatic Pentecostal side, which is not necessarily my history.
Run away from those charismatics, bro.
It's just not my history, but in the expressions are different, right? Not just the theological stuff. I'm talking about like even like what you believe about connection or marketing or spending. You know, I can work in context with what you want to do. Another guy explained it this way. He said he was introducing me to his staff or to a team. I kind of spoke to a little conferencey thing or something. He said, now listen, y'all going to be frustrated with Sweb, but you got to know something about Sweb. He's not going to hold you accountable to things he says. He's going to hold you accountable to things you said. And that's true, man. What is your vision and mission? I'm going to help you do that like a coach does. Like I'm not going to change the mechanics of your throw. I'm just going to put that to work in this system. And that's what I do. So yeah, it's all across the board from church sizes to phases of growth or anywhere. I mean, I've done this around the world, like in multiple countries, multiple continents. And because I teach to the principles of leadership and, you know, psychology, sociology, things like that, not, hey man, here's the social media trends of the day. Dude, go talk to Brady Shearer about that. I'm not that guy for that, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting you said that. I think, you know, and we're going to talk a second about something that you posted a couple weeks ago that I really loved about innovation. I think one of the reasons why what you're doing is so innovative is because you are objective. Mm. And like, that sounds so weird in a church context, right? But like, dude, having grown up, you mentioned sort of like that charismatic Pentecostal background. Like I grew up, it was like high honor culture. You do what you do because you've always done it. You don't ask the question why, because the answer is like either God said or the pastor said. Forget about if it works, right? Like forget about if it's actually working. And you know, I've seen sort of the weird side of that. I've been in basically two church contexts. I've been in like hardcore man of God church that I got saved and grew up in. And then the last 14, really 10, 13, 10, 12, based upon when we say we actually planted the church, right? Planted a church in LA with like my best friend, who's also my pastor. And that's this context where like we could have it out and have it out and got better at doing it over the years. But we were able to sit down and go, okay, is this really working? What do we really think about this or whatever? But what I'm realizing is that's actually not the norm. Like most churches, a lot of churches are not super objective. Am I right about that? Or would you say like, I'm kind of making an assumption?
Yeah, I want to say two things. First, I think you're right. But secondly, let me just tag that with, I'm not the guy that makes extreme binary statements either. You know, there's people like the future of the church is this and Gen Z is that, millennials are that. I'm not that guy. But yes, based on my experience with who I've seen and what I've seen, I totally agree that I feel like, quote, that is the trend. So I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, you know, you sort of talked about, you kind of at the beginning gave this caveat, like, I love the church. Almost as if you had to give a disclaimer. Why do you think church culture is such that anybody who has something to say that maybe is counterintuitive or some would seem to say as like critical or right? Like I'm good friends with like the Theosu guys and like they're the very much the same way. Like Nathan's gonna see something, he's gonna say it. They're gonna make a meme about it. And it's like, why would you do that? That's tearing something down or that's being negative or that's being pessimistic. You don't come across any of those ways to me, but you do come across as someone who says, hey, if I see something, I'm going to speak into it. Like, first of all, I guess what gave you the courage to do that? Is that just personality? And then why do you think that the church is like so often not about just straight honesty and objectivity?
Yeah. Well, first, yeah, I think part of it could just be like my makeup, personality profile, whatever early on. But I will tell you that like you stack a couple of wins, you get some exposure and some experience together, then that adds to the confidence. So what used to be naivety is now just a good resume to prove like, no, I'm telling you, this is history for 25 years. This is what we've seen and it works every single time. You just have a short memory is what I'll usually point out to people. Or you're not addressing the elephant in the room because you took the mirror off the wall, bro. Like stuff like that. Like, but it's not universal. So, or certain things can be universal. So anyway, so part of it, yeah, I started that way, probably personality. I was always that curious kid that's like asking why. And my dad was kind of a black sheep too. Now he grew up Southern Baptist Church, music minister with the choir and all that, but he's also the guy that on Sunday night service took his tie off, you know, freaked out. And then the pastor's getting mad at him for that. And the deacons are mad because he took the organ out and put the drums in. So, you know, those are true stories. And I remember my dad being so beat down from that. So maybe I was raised that way too, to an extent as well. So, I think this is a sweeping statement, but I feel like the reason that people just stay that way is frankly, it's just easier. One of the main themes you'll see me talk about, whether I say it really overtly this clear or just the tones underneath it are, I just feel like there's a lack of work ethic, bro. It's just a low work ethic, a lack of effort in the church world. I joke about it, even though I'm half serious, where I think people get into ministry to stop working. They're like, hey, now that I've earned a lot of money, now that I've worked hard, I want to spend some time with my family. So let me go get a job as an associate pastor at this generic ARC church across the street that's just cakewalk, where we say hard thing because I had to do hard work, but I get an extra Sabbath during the week. Like, wait, why don't we get an extra one in church world? You ever notice that, by the way? That's the dumbest thing to me. I'm happy for you to get it, but just don't tell me your life is hard because it's pre-Easter, bro. Your life ain't hard. So anyway, like until you do 9 services at a portable campus on a weekend, like mm-hmm. then shut up, you know, mm-hmm. the life is not hard pre-Easter, but that's what we say. We all say that because so-and-so at some big church over there that loves biscuits and coffee in the lobby said so, you know, at the last breakout, they said so. And so I think that's just kind of infected everybody to an extent. Some people deal with it better than others. Now, I know the other side of that is, well, as long as Christ is preached, blessed be his name, brother. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Which is brings me back full circle to me, why I'm pretty niche in what I do and who I talk to. I'm not trying to build an empire. So I don't say yes to a lot of people. I say yes to people that want to coach, and want to get better, because I do think that's a trend. Now, I also, this is my industry. Yes. But I see this elsewhere. I think people are just in this place of, oh, dude, I can just do my job from Zoom now. I'll mail it in because you can. And that's the world we live in is the way to say it. Maybe so. Again, that goes back to what I said the very first of this call, though, man. But we should be better. But the church, mm-hmm. we could be better. And I think mm-hmm. not just better at like cool, innovative videos and dangling drummers at Christmas time and haze at Easter and all. I'm not talking about that crap because we're not even innovative in that stuff anymore. But I'm talking about like we could actually be like in shape. What if our finances and our gut were both in shape? You know, in the church world. And we led the way in that, not because Dave Ramsey said, but because we essentially put Dave Ramsey out of business because we were such a good example of it. You know what I mean? Like, what if we could be better at that? And that just comes back to like, at the end of the day, that word is integrity. Do what you said you would do from the beginning of time to when you gave life to Christ to when you became an adult and had kids. Just do what you said you would do. And it solves a lot of problems. In a church, we just don't do that, man.
Yeah, dude, it's so true. I'm trying to figure out I want to go.
I just ranted right a lot, dude. I just vomited on everybody.
But here's what I love, dude. It's like, because I've been, you know, I've spent time working on staff at church. Most of my time has been working at like startups, building businesses while serving mm-hmm. as like a pastor, you know, it's like a lay pastor or something like that. And like my buddies from high school, it's like when I was like on staff at church, they'd be like, what do you do, bro? Just like have coffees all day and read your Bible at the coffee shop. And like, you know, like what actual work do you do? Right. You know what I mean? And yeah, so much of that is so true. There is this it's like this, it's like middle manager church industry class, right? Where it is so interesting. Let's talk for a second about like innovation and where we're at as a church right now. So you posted something the other day that I thought was awesome, dude. It's so awesome.
Good.
You said, basically, you know, the whole idea is like update your metaphor, right? Mm-hmm. Which like, here's mm-hmm. the thing about metaphors of any kind. Now that we can all see every leadership clip and reel, it's like everyone says the same thing, dude. It's like everyone says the same thing. They use the same illustration. They use the same leadership quips and like, Yes. Sometimes you just like, I find myself sometimes going like, wait a minute, is that even real? Like that guy just said X, Y, Z. Like what, what does that even mean? You know what I mean? And so you just kind of talk about like updating your metaphor and you said, hey, stop saying things like we're building the airplane in flight, or another way I've heard is like, yeah, we're just building this thing in the sky. Right. And it's essentially like, you would actually never do this. Right. And you kind of say, but what you did say is you say, say something like we're all, you know, we're laying rail every day. We cross the frontier, or we're exploring and mapping more uncharted territory, like using these kind of things. And these are very like innovative statements, but I want to read what you said, because I this part of this thing, because it's really good, and I want to ask you some questions about it. You said, you know, at least when you run out of rail, you don't crash, you just stop and sit. And this patience is why many more church leaders need than hype to fly what isn't finished, only to have the gravity of leadership bring them crashing. The frontier is where the church expands, and every day there should be new territory, new challenges, new pain, and new innovation. But then you said, but unlike the hype of today's churches, it's good to be able to look back at the rails you laid to know how you got there. Like, would you just like break that down for me? Because in one sense, what I hear you saying is like, church, like a startup, like anything, like we're called to take territory, we're called to build, we're called to expand, we're called to take risks. But at the same time, there are moments of like pause, reflection, planning, being honest with where we're actually at. Just talk to me a bit more about that, this whole idea of, of what you're talking about here.
Well, so two things. One, just a metaphor thing real quick. It's too easy. You know, we love alliterated lists. We love things that rhyme. We like silly comparisons to real world stuff, you know, like, so the airplane of flight is just another one. And so I'm like, hey, whatever you want to say, it's fine. But did you think about it? Like, would you take your kids on a plane that was built in flight? So why is it a bragging point at your church that you're just figuring crap out? And then you're shocked when your church isn't growing. Because you just, well, again, you wouldn't do that in real life in an airport. So your metaphor's stupid. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you thought about it and you intentionally would lead your life and your family in that way, rock on. So that's why I challenge the metaphor. Not that any metaphor is bad. It's like, I can't determine that. I just want you to think about it. Does it actually match what you're trying to say? So that's why I'm anti that metaphor, or that's what I pick on when I say anything about a metaphor. I want people to think it all the way through. So I was just throwing out these other examples of like the rail. Excuse me. The reason the train thing is just funny for me is because it does reflect the way this country was built. And it only went, our kingdom, so to speak, expanded at the pace of the railroad. So the difference in an airplane and a train is one falls out of the sky when you don't build it correctly and you crash and burn. You know, that's church hurt. I would imagine, and I don't have data for it, but I would love if somebody would do like a Barna study. how much church hurt came from churches whose pastors said we're building a plane in flight? You know, and I would be shocked that there was a correlation to that. You know what I mean? It's like, you're an idiot. You didn't think it all the way through. No wonder. So the rail was just one that came to mind. It's like, man, you can take territory and you can expand as much or as fast as you want. That's fine. But once you reach the point of, you know, you've ran out of the scale, call it energy. So steam, you know, whatever it takes to get the train out there, as well as how you get there, in this case, rail, well, then I guess you're going to have to sit and wait. The other thing that's important about that metaphor is you can look back and see where you came from. I'm fascinated at how many churches do actually grow in a short season. Basically, you can, the ones you'd pick on is who was on the Outreach 100 last year? How many are on the same list this year? Like four. Like that's how it is every year. Like, cool, you had an egg drop last year. You counted everybody six times and you found pregnant ladies, but you can't turn around and tell us how you got here. There's no rails behind you because you stumbled into it. And I feel like when we talk about kingdom growth, and again, that's funny because that's in scripture. We talk about expanding the kingdom and building something, but in real life kingdom growth, whether it be these funny games on your phone or you know, gaming system, whatever, the point of building a kingdom is also that you have to maintain what you've built, what you've taken, the territory you've taken. You can't go from place to place. And a lot of people are using kingdom expansion language, but that's not what they're doing. They're just kind of lobbing grenades into culture and saying, oh, that's us. We took that territory. And that's where the metaphors kind of break down. So the rails imply that you've been somewhere and you can track back to where you came from and repeat the process, repeat the process, repeat the process. So most of the towns in where I live, and probably even where you live, were started because of the railroad. As the railroad expanded, some employee of the month, so to speak, they gave them a town name and said, hey, we're going to name this town after this amazing railroad guy. Hey, why don't you hang out here and build something up, and then we'll keep going. And I just feel like, why is that metaphor not used more than the plane thing? Now, that's just me talking off the cuff. By the way, I'm not saying I wrote a book about this, but the point is, at least as you unpack the metaphor, you can see like, okay, now that makes sense. I can do something with that. But I can't just rebuild the airplane after it crashed and burned and killed 300 people on the ground. You see, that metaphor breaks down pretty quickly. And that's what I'm trying to say on the rail. Same with the innovation real quick. Well, I was just going to say on the innovation, just tagging onto that, because I say new pain and new innovation on that thing. And innovation is obviously what we want to talk about too. And you already know this. I'm sure every listener knows this. Your innovation comes from your limitation, not the other way around, right? Well, if I had $1 million, I would do X, Y, Z. Yeah, but you don't have $1 million. So that doesn't make you smart. It makes you distracted by thinking about what you would do with what you don't have. So innovation is what you can do with what you do have. It's also, you could apply that same logic to stewardship, to discipline, to just being a good Christian, to being a good dad. Like, what do you have? What can you work with? Like Jesus or God even asked Moses, what's that in your hand? I just need you to have the faith to pick up a stick, bro. I don't need you to worry about all the stuff. Just pick up a stick. Just what's in your hand. And so a rail, that's all I got. I got one rail in, one rail out. I'm expanding the kingdom this direction. I don't have this what if, who knows what's going to happen. We'll just fly around the sky and see what happens. I feel like there's more innovation that comes from the hard work of laying rail on the frontier. You don't know what's in front of you, but you dang sure know what's behind you and you can do something with it. And to me, that's more innovative than just throwing darts at the map.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true, dude. It's like you hear innovation and you think, oh, technology or some new system or some like some new thing that costs a bunch of money. And the reality is like innovation comes from going, who are we? Where are we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's be real about what season we're at in our church or in our ministry and where we want to go and get creative in how we're going to get there. Right. And I think that's to me is innovation, especially in a church space where there is no like one size fits all. You know, earlier you were talking about the metaphor, like one metaphor I think about is like healthy things grow, you know, like, healthy things grow, but cancer also grows. You know what I mean? Like this idea that like, oh, so does that mean at the end of the year, senior pastor's like, attendance didn't go up, so my church may not be healthy. Like we just say stuff and we don't realize what we're actually saying. Right.
Right.
What do you think is like, when we talk about innovation, just to kind of close here, I guess there would be two questions. Cause I do think, you know, someone hears the term like elevation and I do think they think like that is a place that innovated. Right. But it probably wasn't always like, I remember dude, super, super early days, like Bible college, Stephen Furtick had just planted the church and he ran a blog and it was like, who's this pastor guy? He was kind of like one of the first like build in public kind of guys where he was just like blogging along the journey until it got to a certain place. But was there like a intangible there that made it innovative, you know, not like a tactic or a strategy, but like what were the, what was in the water intangibly? Another way to ask that question is some of the churches that you go to that are really innovative, what's the intangible in the water there that you see and experience?
Yep. No, I love that you asked that. So elevation, I'd love to start on that one for sure. But I can give you some other examples. So in to your point of what's in the water, this is true for all these examples here, plus 1,000 others I don't have time to mention. Probably literally 1,000 others because I do actually keep a list. is like hard work, grit, work ethic, hustle. So that's why you can go to two churches that are both breaking records and being quote innovative, doing things that other people aren't doing, but they're not even close to the same church. Personality styles different, preaching styles different. One has, you know, HD, the other has old school standard definition, like it's 97, but somehow they still work. You know, there's a whole arm of churches out here that wear plaid blazers every single day. That is their church uniform. And they seem to be doing just fine. And then you got a bunch of churches out here that haven't gone a day without a hoodie. And they seem to be doing just fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because the only way to be innovative is if it's to wear a Fear of God Essentials hoodie.
You have to. If you don't have Essentials hoodie, 100%. Or you're just not going to be successful. That's what I learned at every conference I go to that's $495. So I know where that money goes and I sure as heck doesn't go to build a church. Anyway, so they all work. But the thing that's underneath all of them is work ethic and hustle at whatever it is that they said they were going to work at. Not work aimlessly. Some people, their whole job is I want to go build a brand. I want to build a name. I'm not mad at you for that. Thanks for saying it outright and going to do it and actually succeeding at it. So then there's people out there that I want to go build the local church and not even be famous. Great. I can name a lot of churches right now doing that very thing. Now it's funny. They will become quote famous, if you will. Furtick used to always say the phrase preacher famous. Cause I love that he has this unique humility and insight to say, no, there's celebrity and then there's preacher celebrity. There's a difference by the way. So, and I wish other pastors would understand there's a difference. That's why we need to stop saying the phrase global senior pastor. So, praise God for global, Taylor calling that out.
Global, it's so good.
I love it. He's so good. You ain't global. I don't care that you've been around the globe. You still ain't global, man. Nobody knows who you are. So that was the main thing. So we worked really hard at Elevation and just like, well, we don't have that. What do we have? Let's drive hard at this. I can give you 1,000 examples, which I won't do now, but where I've been in meetings and conversations of what we could do. Now we're talking about a church with millions and tens of thousands of people impact. Like if Ferdic says, I'm going to come to this town, like 1,000 people show up to that town. It's possible. But that was never, ever, ever one of our strategies back then, because it wasn't what was possible. It's what can we act on and sustain and steward well? Like, what can we multiply? Not just where can we hit one out of the park because it's, you know, a close fence and the wind's blowing the right way. So, but that takes work, because it takes just as much work to say no than it does to say yes. Matter of fact, it might take more work to hold your ego in check. Another trend out there that people have forgotten. So another example of this, by the way, I have a friend, Peter Wan. He's at The Hope, is what they call their church in Taiwan, Taipei, in Taiwan. Been out there, going out there again this year. Just phenomenal people that have less, but do more. It's a big church. He's doing tremendous things to change their country as well as other countries around them. But they don't have what all of us over here have, and especially in Nashville and Austin and Charlotte or whatever. But the underlying word, he's like, man, but here's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to go hard at it. I'm going to sweat. I'm going to bleed. I'm going to probably lose friends, but I'm not in this for friends. I'm in this to win a championship. And here's something I always say to people. You ever notice how winners always have friends, but just because you're friends, that doesn't necessarily make you winners. It only goes in one direction. And to our credit at Elevation, Ferdic's credit, who created that. And again, there's other church examples, other preacher examples. The goal was like, let's create a championship team. Let's win at this. You can actually be good at church. And we all know this because we can also point to everybody who's bad at church, which implies you can win at church. We just said we're going to win. And every championship team has a sacrifice and work harder than others. That's why Tom Brady played as long as he did, because he just worked harder at the right things than others. And that's it. That's where innovation comes from, bro. It's not money. It's not at all money. It's not at all the famous preacher, because a lot of people don't even like the Ferdic preacher style. And they seem to be doing fine. So it's not a style thing. It's like, oh, if you work for that guy, he must be a really great leader. No, I'm not throwing him under the bus, but no, he's not a top leader in my opinion, but he's an influencer, got things done. But in the way we would define leader, no, I'm not saying it's that. There are worse preachers doing just as good. There are better leaders doing just as good. There are people with less money doing just as good, but the underlying is like they have a conviction, or they have clarity about what they're called to do. Then they have a conviction to go get it done, and they work and endure pain, if not create pain, to that end. And that's just so unique, man. I see that in business world too. You hear this from all your epic CEOs who changed the world, your Elons and Steve Jobs and everybody in between. Yeah. It's like, man, I did it.
What was it? I just saw the CEO of NVIDIA. Someone asked him about success. And he said, the thing nobody wants to say is the pain and suffering that comes with it. And yep. He says, I would tell anyone who tells me that they want to be successful that I hope you go through as much pain and suffering as you possibly can. Because that is the other side. And that's the difference, right? It doesn't mean that doesn't mean that you don't have fun. It doesn't mean that you don't realize like, hey, we're going to enjoy doing this. But at the same time, there is a different mentality of someone who says like, I want to win. 100%. And everyone, what winning means to one guy could be different to another guy, right? But I love it. 100%. Well, dude, this has been awesome. Thank you, and so helpful. Man. Where can people find you online, man? Like where, Instagram, you on Twitter, what platform are you on? And,
I got a few of them out there, but man, the best way is my website, sweb.fyi, sweb with 2 B's, swbb.fyi. And then I'm on Instagram at Stephen P. Webb. I'm a PH Stephen, by the way. So Stephen P. Webb. But if you're following any of the cool guys out there, maybe somewhere you'll stumble along my profile somewhere and we'll chat back and forth. I will say this. I like to plug this, by the way. Man, I'm easily the most responsive person you're going to find, especially in the church world. So if you need something, DM me, ask me questions. I'm not going to charge you for every little question like most people do, man. So hopefully whoever's out there listening that says that I might know something, hit me up and I'll connect with you pretty quick.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we'll link to all that in the show notes. And dude, I appreciate it. I appreciate your voice, man. I appreciate your perspective. Thank you. It's refreshing to me personally. And so if you're listening to this, man, follow Sweb. I think you'll be refreshed as well. Hey, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.